quiet me down a bit. Voila.
Where's the lid, mate?
Yep. Morning. Is it morning or afternoon now? Morning. Yeah, my name's Bob. I'm an addict. Oh, fucking hell. I feel right under the spotlight here. These lights are bang on me, do you know what I mean? And I was kind of hoping on the way up here there'd be a microphone for me to walk up and down the stage with, just to kind of take away the bit of the nerves that are going on right now, do you know what I mean? And yeah, sweet, brilliant. Thanks, Frank, for asking me. Thanks for everyone for putting this on. And it's nice to see some faces here, some people from my plot where I'm at now. I've seen some people from Bournemouth, where my journey started. And I've seen a couple of people that I've used with on the streets as well, do you know what I mean? And what a pleasure it is to see us all sitting here in it, trying to do what we do to stay clean for another day. I don't know why I keep looking at you. It's kind of just a much just stand there and talk to you like that. Instead of you just like looking at me. But yeah. No, I'm nervous as fuck. I'm sorry for swearing, but I'm gonna swear. There'll probably be a lot of ums and and that, but we'll get there in the end. I come from this little town in Hertfordshire called Waltham Cross. I grew up in a loving, caring home with a mum, a dad, a brother, two sisters, family, pets, all that sort of stuff. And my childhood memories are kind of like nothing terrible, you know what I mean? I hear some tragic stories about people's childhoods and all that, and that was my experience, that sort of thing. But I do remember I was naughty as a child, do you know what I mean? One of my main memories of being a child is my brother had this computer, right? It's a Sega Master System. I say it was. He used to put the cartridges in the top and he had it. And I used to bang on his door and go, "Michael, just let me have one go." And he'd go, "Fuck off." Because he's in there with his mates. I'd go, "Please, just let me have one go." And he'd be going, "Mum, get him away from the door." And one day I woke up one morning and he was standing at the end of the bed and he went, "Yeah, here's the computer. You're going to Nan's house." And I said, "What games have I got?" So all I was worried about was what games he was giving me with his computer. Yeah. So I go to my Nan's, I come back a week later and my mum told me my dad had died. And I was 11 then. I just started my first year at secondary school. And I didn't quite understand what had happened. And then I went back to my Nan's again for another week. We come back and then I was dressed up in a suit and a tie and I was at the funeral service watching my dad get lowered into the ground. Just wondering what was happening. You know what I mean? I was a bit naive to life then at that age. And from that point, that moment, I kind of lost the ability to trust in men. In people, it affected me in a way that I didn't see it affecting everyone else. I got passed from aunties to uncles to my grandparents' house. I was passed about because my mum had to look after my brother and my two sisters as well. And my nan, bless her, she had this little cabinet with miniature bottles of vodka in it and miniature bells and all that. And I used to nick the vodka and I'd drink it. And I'd fill it up with water and I'd hide them in the airing cupboard. That's how clever I was. I'd nick them out of the cabinet, yeah, and hide them in the airing cupboard, bottles of water. Eventually I went back to my mum's and because my dad, when my mum said, "No, stop doing that," to me that meant keep doing it till your dad gets home. Because when my dad got home and he said, "Fucking stop doing that," I'd stop doing it. And because my dad weren't around to tell me no, I could do what I wanted. And my mum couldn't kind of control me, you know. My progression's kind of like everyone else's, you know what I mean? They started off with a beer, I like the effect of alcohol. I love prescription pills. But cocaine, people would go to me in the pub, "Have a live nut," and I'd have a live nut, and I'd be like that. 20 minutes, couldn't speak, couldn't stand the effect produced by cocaine, but it still didn't stop me doing it. I'd eat ecstasy tablets and chase my fucking chin up and down the high street and around car parks and, like a loon. and then I'd be hanging out, I'd be standing in the pub drinking beer when I was old enough to sneak in there drinking pints of beer, having them flicks that made me like that. And talking to my pals, going, yeah, keep waiting them junkies. It's fucking smacking, it's keep waiting them. And I'd go, yeah, fuck crackheads and junkies. And when they all went out raving and all that, I'd slip off round to the junkies to find out what they was up to. And before I know it, I'm on the pipe. Love the pipe. But as soon as I smoke the pipe, I need Grant to come down. And I boot it. And then I crossed that. People say about that invisible line. There was no invisible line on me. I just went straight forward. Yeah, I went from extreme to extreme to extreme. And I always ended up in prison. I'd sit in prison for months at a time, detox. Think, come out of prison 6 weeks later or 9 months later, whatever it was I was in there for. And I'd get down to the gate and I'd hadn't even thought about using, and as soon as I opened that gate to let me out of prison, that my stomach would be in knots, yeah? Because when the responsibility of me running my own life is taken out of my hands, when I'm told when to get up and shit and shave and eat and go to the gym and shower and all that sort of stuff, I can cope with that without a drug in me. But when I'm outside and it's just Bob, I can't cope with that stuff. I need to have something in me, and I believe that line might have got me on the way out. Just get one beer on the train home. So I buy 4 beers. And then get off at your stop, and I go past my stop. And then I get off at Stoke Newington or Stamford Hill, and I go and see it was either Black Dan, Goofy Dan, Fat Dan, Skinny Dan, Tall Dan, African Dan, it was all called fucking Dan. Dan with glasses. Light skinned Dan, yeah, back in the day, these were. And now, before I know it, I'm back on a fucking pipe again. And the brown, and I remember going around this geezer's house, and he said to me, why are you wasting your money smoking it? He goes, you need to bang it up. And I've never done a pin before in my life. And I went in, his name's Chris the Blob, obviously, because he's a bit. Bit of a unit, that was his name back then, and he took me upstairs in his bedroom in his mum and dad's house, and I watched him cook up the gear, and he put like a five as well in a pin, and I'm warming like fucking 16 a day, you know what I mean, on a foil, and he puts like a five as well in a pin, and I go go on then, and let him do it, and then I wake up in the hospital, the battle for 15 minutes to bring me back to life. And the first thing I said was, where's Chris? Because I needed to find him, yeah? I thought he did abandon me, you know what I mean? I thought I need to find him so he can teach me how to do that again. And there's definitely something wrong there, because that's not the thought process of anyone. Like, people don't do that, do they? So you end up in hospital and they've told you we've fought for 15 minutes to bring you back to life. They're like, you obviously go, I ain't going to fucking do that again. But obviously I needed to find him so he could teach me how to do it. And from that point on, it was like it was game over. It went from fucking the 1 mils in the arm to the 5 mils in the groin, and then shooting up my arse because I can't get a vein in my neck, the top of my cock, wherever I could get, by the bottom of my feet. 0.5 pins in the feet, anywhere, standing hot baths. I went down to about 8 stone, I looked like that microphone. Like just a stick with a head on it, you know what I mean? Like some people said, like a golf club, I couldn't stand up straight. I had fucking, like abscesses and all that. And I got into a relationship with a bird because she was using, we think, oh, let's have a kid. That'll change everything. So we bring this little girl into the world. I was in prison at the time when she was born, and the mum brought her up to visit me, and she brought my little daughter over, wrapped up in a blanket. She was born addicted to methadone, and she went, here's your daughter, and I said, what you got for me? And she said, nothing. And I give her the baby back and I went, I'll see you later. And then I went back to the wing because I didn't care about fuck all, you know what I mean? All I cared about was gear. Drugs, drugs and more drugs. And then I come out of prison from that sentence and I was back on the scene, in and out of prison for a couple of years. Then I ended up in a mental institution after a suicide attempt from using with one of my pals, who I've used with quite all the way through my using, and we was in a hotel smoking crack and injecting heroin, trying to work out how to get flat, because I think flat is going to solve all my problems. Yeah, so between pipes we go, yeah, like what you got to do is. And all that gear, trying to hold it in, and all that nonsense. Go, you've got to get sectioned under the mental health. So I go, how do I do that? He goes, you've got to pretend you're suicidal. So I go, see, I can do that. So after that session ended, I walked from the hotel, I walked up the A10 to the bridge. There's a bridge. And I sat on the bridge, and I remember making this roll up, just sitting there over the bridge, watching the motors go past underneath, yeah. And there was a car wash, and the geezers were just going to me, they was going, jump! Jump! And I was going, phone the police! Because I'm on a black, yeah? This is the mentality of our thinking, well, my thinking anyway, yeah? And that's my best thinking. And the police turn up, they block all the road off, and then the fire brigade come, the fucking ambulances turn up, and I'm a persistent prolific offender. Yeah, you know, one of them, isn't it? Yeah, getting nicked three times, four times a week. And the coppers know me, and they're going to me, Bates, don't stay there, don't do it. And I'm going to fucking jump. And they're going, no, they don't. And the stuff I was shouting out to this copper was where I was at, but looking right there and then, I didn't know. But looking back now, what I was shouting out to them old Bill was exactly where I was at. I was sick to death of doing what I was doing, yeah? Sick to death of hurting the people around me. I could not stop using. I couldn't stop using for my little girl. I couldn't stop using for my mum, killing her slowly. Do you know what I mean? And I was sick to death of getting up in the morning after I go and get my methadone, supervised consumption, standing in front of a queue of people drinking 110ml methadone, waiting for Valium. Do you know what I mean? To then go out and score, and I was just sick to death of doing it. And that's where I was at. Do you know what I mean? They goes, and we're coming up. And I said, send two female officers up. Because the men are pretty rough with me, you know what I mean? The coppers, they're pretty handy with me. And they sent these two women coppers up, and they was going, listen, we can help you. Fucking ambulance. I'm going, no, you're going to nick me and all this. And it's going, no, the ambulance is down there. And I see the ambulance, and I just hopped off the railing. Skipped off into this ambulance. They took me to the fucking... they took me to the hospital. The first doctor said, listen, like, we can help you. Come in, we can help you. And he goes, sign this paperwork. So I signed the paperwork, admitted myself into this secure unit. Yeah, I think it's sweet, I'd only been there a couple of days. And then I had to see this other doctor, and he took one look at me, and he said, I see your type every fucking day. He goes, I know exactly what you're doing. He said, however, you've seen my colleague first, and he's admitted you. If I'd have seen you first, you'd have been out the door, straight back out the door, yeah. So I end up in this mental hospital, and... The next day after telling them I'm a drug addict, like they couldn't fucking tell. So what I mean? And I go in there and I minimise my using to people because I don't want you to think I'm that bad. And they go, what are you using? I go, I look £10 bit every now and again. And they go, all right, we give you 10 mil Valium every 4 hours. And I go, yeah, lovely. Hide that. Yeah, and I go, yeah, the 10 mil Valium will do sweet every 4 hours. So I take the 10 mil Valium, I sit in the TV room. And I start watching the fucking clock, yeah? So then it goes like 3 hours, 59 minutes. And the it felt like half hour had passed, and then it goes 3 hours, 58 minutes. And I just thought, fuck this shit, I can't do this. And I just thought, I'm getting behind the worst person on the wall, even though I was in there with them. Getting behind the nuttiest one in there, and whatever they put in his medication, I'm having. And they called the medication, and I got behind this geezer. They put two cups on the counter, and I just fucking walloped him. I didn't hit him. I just barked on it. I just knocked him out of the way, all 8 stone of me. And I ate his tablets. Next thing I know, these great big Nigerian or African nurse geezers, whatever they fucking was, they was giants, yeah. Like, one of them's grabbed me round the throat, telling me to spit it out. I was trying to get his hands up to tell him I swallowed it. And then the other one's hit me in the arse with a needle, like Axel. And I woke up the fucking next day with my head stuck to my shoulder, covered in dribble, and I thought, sweet. This is all right, you know what I mean? This is all right in here. And then all I had to do was just cause some sort of commotion. I'd go in the office, say, can I make a phone call? And they'd go, no, and I'd go, give me the fucking phone. And they'd press the panic strip, and I'd be looking for these geezers to see what way they was coming with that needle, you know what I mean? And, yeah, it was fucking nuts. And I used to have the walk-rounds, and like, because of my little girl, the social services was there, probation was there, the local drug team was there, the psychiatrists and the doctors, the night staff and the day staff. When I'm on drugs and it's good, I want more. So I tell them when I'm at my nut, yeah, listen, I've seen dead people in the corridor, I need something else. And then when I'm not on them, I'm telling the day staff, listen, I'm on a black. I'm only in here to get a flat. There's nothing wrong with me. But when we was having these walk rounds, it was like everything I was saying was written down, do you know what I mean? So it became like I'd had this split personality disorder. It was making my matters worse, you know what I mean? And I kept saying to him, when are you letting me home? I need to go home. And they were saying to me, listen, we found you sitting on a bridge trying to take your own life. You're taking psychotic patients' medication, and you're getting sedated 3 times a week. They're not the behaviour of the same person. You ain't fucking going nowhere. You're staying here, you know what I mean? But by the grace of God, the fellow on the drug team, who used to come round to the police stations when I got nicked and bring his big book with him, and I knew he had a big pouch of snout, and a few of you probably know in Manchester, Tom, and he used to come round and he'd try and read, be saying, this is what you need, Rob, this is what you need, and I would just smoke his snout, and then I'd get released, I'd be gone again. When I got nicked, I'd go, I'll get Tom out, because I knew he'd have snout. And he'd come with his book, and he could smoke in the police station in the courtyard then. And I'd just smoke, and he was working on a drug team, and he said to me, there's a CA meeting in the grounds of the hospital in the old ambulance place. I'm going to try and see if I can get you over there for a meeting, yeah? And I went, all right, sweet. And the geezers that were sedating me, they was escorting me over to this meeting in the ambulance place, and they was waiting outside for the hour and 20 minutes for however long it was on for, and then escorted me back to the ward, yeah? And the first meeting that I went in, I never knew nothing about this stuff. Even when I was in prison, I didn't know nothing about it. And I walked in that meeting, and Tom went to me, he went, how you doing? And I went, yeah, I'm all right. He goes, how the fuck are you all right? He goes, you're living in that hospital. And he goes, I'm going to try and help you. And I've heard it a million times, I'm going to try and help you. And within the space of a couple of weeks, he managed to get me discharged from there into the care of a detox centre where I spent a month in there. The day I was getting released from that detox centre, all I wanted was that certificate so I could take it home to my mum and say, look, mum, I've done this detox and I'm clean. Can I come back home? Yeah, because I weren't allowed in my mum's house, I weren't allowed in none of my sister's houses or my brother's houses because I'd rob everyone. If I could come in there, anyone's house, I was leaving with something, whether it be a spoon to cook up the gear or an electrical appliance or your fucking purse. You know what I mean, I was the type of addict that I used to rob the beggar. The beggar had one leg. He was on crutches. I used to wait for the rush out of finishes the beggar outside the train station at Southby Road. And I used to wait, watch him, yeah, you know, because I knew he'd have money, because I couldn't get no shops to shoplift no more, and I was shit at burgling and all that stuff. And I used to rob him, right? And I'll tell you this one. The geez had one leg. We called him Foot, obviously, because he only had one fucking leg. And I see him one day, and he's got his prosthetic leg on, yeah? And the geezer is standing 6'2", bit of weight on. Last time I seen him, he's bent over on his crutch, yeah, one leg. I goes, come and get some gear. And he goes, all right. He goes, I've got no money. I said, yeah, don't worry, we get the gear, get on the train. So he comes with me on the train. I call up the dealer, he comes to meet me. He goes, what do you want? I goes, I want 2 beer and a white. I said, I've got on tick till 12 o'clock. He said, no. He said, what you got? I goes, come here. I said, take your leg off. He goes, nah. He goes, I've waited 5 years for this leg off there. He says, yeah. I said, listen, don't worry. We'll get back at 12 o'clock. As soon as the money lands in the bank, mate, it's coming out, yeah? So the dealer goes to me, but he goes, I can't take that. He goes, people offer me like gold and Rolexes and things like that. He goes, I've never had a leg. I goes, but look, it's got a brand new trainer on it and all, yeah? So I goes, come and take it off. So the geezer, bless him, I'm a cunt, and that's what I'm like when I'm using, yeah? This is why no one would use with me. No one would go arse with me on a bag of gear. So he takes his leg off. I take it over to the car. The drug dealer's laughing his head off because I'm handing him this fucking fake leg with a trainer on it, Reebok Classic. And I take the gear and I go, sweet, up, and I go, yeah, I'll bill you later on. 12, as soon as it lands, yeah, I'll bill you, come pay you up. Fuck, it's a sign, that is, yeah. Fuck it, man. And he goes, me, you got it? I goes, yeah, see you later on. And I run off. And I left him, no leg, leaning on a car. Yeah, that's the type of joke. That's how I roll when I take drugs, yeah? But the day I was getting released from this detox centre, I was thinking, right, I've been in hospital for 3 months, detox for a month, I'll have a beer on the way home, be like, nice, you know, like picture that cold pint of Stella, the little bubbles down the side of it, and I go, oh, right, first, clencher, that one, get one of them, and the guy has a phone call in the office. So I get on the phone, he's that Tom again, yeah, Manchester Tom. He goes, where are you going? I goes, I'm going home. He said, fucking home. He goes, you live in hospital a month ago, you ain't got home to go to. He goes, you've got 6 month funding in a rehab in Bournemouth. I goes, I don't need that, I'm clean. He goes, let someone else do your thinking for a change. He goes, look what your best thinking got you. And so I went, all right, sweet, I swallowed it. But all I heard him say really was 6 months down on the coast in the summer, get a flat at the end of it. So I'm still on the flat bars, yeah. So off I go on my merry way down to sunny Bournemouth. But I end up in this rehab. I knock on the door. First person opens the door is a geezer. The last time I see him, I robbed him in an alleyway. So I've travelled all the way down here. And the first person I see opens the door is a fella that I robbed of his money in an alleyway. You know what I mean? So straight away, I go, oh, all right, mate, yeah. Oh, you remember that time in that? Trying to blag it, he goes, come in. Do you know what I mean? So forget that. Forget that. That was then, this is now. I'm just happy to see you here. You know what I mean? And I was in there for a month. And then I had a visit from my mum, my sister, and my little girl. She came up, she was about 2 then, maybe 3, 2 or 3. And I've been attending meetings, different fellowships. And I'd heard about the first one, does his damage, this, that, and the other. And they went. And my head went, have a beer, Rob, because you're a drug addict. And I went, yeah, I am, yeah, I'm a junkie. I'm not an alcoholic. Yeah, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm a fucking drug addict. So I snuck out the rehab, mixed a couple of bottles of vodka, I come back, I take 2 hostages with me, because that's what I do. And within the space of a couple of hours, I've robbed someone for their phone, I've nicked purses out of the nightclub and the pub. I've got money for a smack of crack when I'm in a crack house in Boscombe. smoking crack. Well, I think, how the fuck has this happened? And that weren't what I'd come here for, you know what I mean? So I always end up in fucking weird places when I smoke crack. It's either graveyards or car parks or stairwells in things. It was in a car park at the council offices on the corner of the road of the rehab, and with this geezer and another fella, and like I was saying, just snapped inside me. It's like I've had millions of rock bottoms. Yeah, rock bottoms was when I ran out of money, or when I couldn't get a vein, or when the dealer's phone was engaged. That was a rock bottom, you know what I mean? Or if the phone box had hit my 20 pence, that was a rock bottom. You know what I mean, anything, yeah? But I had this, something happened. It was like, as if my head and my heart connected, yeah? And my head just went, Rob, the game's up, man. You can't do this, the game's up. There's Big Ear James on the phone. And I goes, I'm going back to the rehab. And he goes, you can't go back to the rehab. I said, well, I've got nowhere else to fucking go. And I went back, it come on top, and they moved me to somewhere else, another rehab. And that's when my journey started, yeah? So that visit that I had with my mum, my sister, and my little girl was on my birthday. And that was on the 27th of May 2011. And that's when my journey started, the weekend after that, yes. I say the 30th of May 2011. I haven't had to use, I haven't had to drink, I haven't had to commit crime. But I've upset people, do that regularly still. Do you know what I mean? I could still be an arsehole. I took on some suggestions, do you know what I mean? I didn't turn up, like, I take my hat off to people who walk through the door of the rooms. I couldn't do it that way. Do you know what I mean? I had to be removed from society and go through the process of the rehab and all that. So I didn't come in these rooms with he says it in that book about the desperation of a drowning man, yeah? I didn't come in there. I come in here with a bit of clean time behind me, where I've been mollycoddled under the umbrella of the treatment centre. They'd wiped my arse for me for a few months and I was good to go. And I got a sponsor. I went through the steps. Fucking, I was a weekend dad to my daughter. I used to go and pick her up because my life was improving. When I got my driver's license, I got my first bank account, I got all this. I used to go pick my little girl up, treat her like a princess all weekend, send her back home again, yeah? Knowing that the mother's still on the pipe and doing what she's doing, but because my life was going in this direction, I kind of turned a blind eye to it all. And I got a phone call one day. Me and my partner, I was just about to have a baby. We lost that baby. The week we lost the baby, we got the phone call from the social services saying, if you don't go and get your little girl, she's going into care. So I had to go and leave my partner who's just lost his baby and had to go through all the operations and all that, to go and be a dad to my little girl who, I don't know how to do ponytails, I don't know how to fucking iron clothes, yeah? I don't know how to do all this other stuff, but I had to go and learn how to do it, do you know what I mean? And that's what I've done, and I rubbed my fucking hairline out the back of my head like that, because I was fucking worrying about she needs a PE kit for next week, and fucking she's eating my dinners that I can't even cook. I'm a takeaway man, yeah? If it's my night to cook now, we're getting pizza. Yeah? Because I can't fucking cook. But she was eating the dinners, and she loved it, and then I had her with me for about 8 months, 9 months. My money went in the bank. I sold the cars that I had because I had to pay rent to keep a roof over our heads. I went back to bait. I come into recovery with my front teeth in a fucking envelope, yeah? But they'd been knocked out. They was false anyway, yeah? But they'd been knocked out in that hospital. And I come into recovery with fuck all, and then I was in recovery a couple of years in, and then I went straight back to having fuck all again and a 6 or 7 year old girl with me, and the fellowship carried me, man. People carried me through that. I lost my mum at 2 years clean. People carried me through that. I had a list of things I wanted to do for my mum. I didn't get to do none of them. But what I did give her was 2 years of where she didn't have to fucking worry. Give her a peace of mind where she didn't have to worry about the phone call, I'm in prison or I'm dead or I'm in the hospital and all that bollocks. Anyway, my little girl went back to her mum somehow, let the nan take her out. The nan's obviously going to side with the mum, so she took her back to the mum's. If I'd have gone round and kicked the door off, there would have been a 10 o'clock manhunt for me, kidnapper. You know what I mean? Because nothing was drawn up by the court anyway. So I didn't see her for 18 months after that. In that time, me and my partner, we have a little boy. It'd be a right nice time. She comes out, she's not allowed, she had a cesarean, a few complications. She wasn't allowed to drive. The first night she's allowed to drive, she goes out, falls over, breaks her ankle. So now we've got this newborn baby, she's got a broken ankle. And then I get another phone call, social services. She's in, my little girl now, she's in police protection. Got 72 hours, just go to court, fill the paperwork out. And otherwise she's going into foster care. I was at work, this was two and a half years ago. I was at work when I got the phone call. And I said to the boys, listen, you either come now or I'm leaving you on the job. I turned out, all my hair was sticking up, scaffold, I was covered in shit. Take the job down. I've been in an altercation with a cab driver who had knocked my front tooth out, so I had a tooth missing as well. And I go to the court, I feel, it's not funny, I feel, been knocked out a few times that too, you know what I mean? But it keeps coming back. So I go to the court, I fill out the paperwork, I give it to the usher, goes, yeah, 270. What? 270? So get the 270 paid, yeah? And then I give it to her, I go, oh, she says, oh, hang on, wait a minute, the judge wants to see you. So I go, oh, fuck. So I sit about, I'm waiting there, and I've been in many courtrooms, yeah, I've seen docs like this, going, yeah, not guilty, and it wasn't me, I wasn't even there, and all like, just lying, I'm standing in this court, I ain't done a fucking thing wrong, and I'm shitting myself, yeah? So the judge comes out the chamber at the back, he goes, oh, sit down, Mr. Beats. Thanks, and he goes, sit down, he goes, I've been waiting for you to come, the social services told me you was coming. And I said to him, I've come here from work, and I'm sorry about how I look and all that. If I had enough time, I would have gone home and changed and that. And he said to me, 10 out of 10 for getting here on time, 10 out of 10 for filling the application out, right? 10 out of 10 for paying the fee. He goes, I know where you've been. He goes, I've seen my criminal report thing. Do you know what I mean? All the crimes that I've been done for and all that. He's read all that gear. So I'm thinking, oh, fucking, this is going to go down well. He's read all that, all my criminal records, and I'm here trying to fight for a little girl to get her out of police protection. And he goes, I know exactly where you've been. He goes, from what the social services have told me, I know what you're doing now. And he said, don't worry about how you look. He said, because I'll tell you now, he said, it blew me away. But he said, if you stood before me with your hair gelled up in a suit, I'd probably denied your application. He said, but from what I can see and what I know about you, he goes, I'll see you in court on Monday. So I left the court with the paperwork. I went and picked up my little girl. She come back to live with me, my partner, and our kids. We went through the court process. Long drawn out court process, went on for about 6 months. But my little girl now lives with me for the remainder of her minority till she's 18. Do you know what I mean? Stuff like this don't happen. I come from the gutter. Yeah, I come from the gutter. I break sin bins open and stick needles wherever I can fucking get them. And the next thing there, the court's handing me responsibility. Even though she's my daughter anyway, and I'm only doing what normal people do. Do you know what I mean? But the judge, he commended me in his court case about my honesty for it all, because obviously the mum had made allegations of domestic violence in the relay. Obviously there was domestic violence. She smoked the fucking last bit of gear, mate. It's going off. Yeah? If I leave a bit of gear somewhere, it's going, yeah, of course, you know you like because you know, innit? You leave a bit of gear somewhere, you come back, it's fucking gone, it's fucking going off. And when he asked me about all the domestic violence and all that, and like the step forward gear, you didn't like, you say you don't like talking about it, it's because it's pointless. I buried that shit years before. So when it come up in court and I was faced with these questions about domestic violence in relationships, I was able, I was free from that. And I said, yeah, there was domestic violence. Pair of fucking drug addicts. That's what I mean. And And again, and this judge commended me on my honesty through the whole of the court case, you know what I mean? Because I've only ever been told by judges, listen, you're a menace to society. Yeah, you're fucking going away for 6 months, get him out, remove him from the court, you know what I mean? And whilst he was commending me, and my partner's sitting behind me, and I'm going like, because he's going, oh, you're doing so good, you've done really well, and I'm going like, I'm going, did you hear that? So she's going to me, fucking turn around. And I missed everything, when everyone's getting up there and they're leaving, you know what I mean? And missed the outcome of what they said, but that's what they said, she could remain with us till the remainder of her 18 and till she's 18. And now she's like my kids, they live in a safe environment. They know I ain't going to come home drunk tonight. I ain't going to beat up the mum. There might be police knocking at the door, maybe the bailiffs for the train. They've got a few bailiff things going on, yeah. It's a process, yeah. But we're going through, yeah. There's no rush. Yeah, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Guess which one I am. That's it. You know, I ain't gonna bore you, so I ain't got enough time because you gave me 5 minutes 5 minutes ago, didn't you? But let me keep going. But what this has given me, the experience of going through the 12 steps, and it's taught me how to love myself, yeah? And care for myself, do the right things, find some things that Rob likes, yeah? Because Rob didn't know if it was fucking gas or electric when he came in here. So I mean, I didn't know what my favourite colour was or what fucking food I liked. My vocabulary was, have you got, how long are you going to be? That was it. Or do you want to buy this for a tenner? That was all I fucking knew, you know what I mean? And I come in here and people talk different languages, like the phenomenon, the craving. And I was like, fucking, what the fuck's that? What the fucking hell is he on about? Fucking spiritual awakening and all that, you know? It's just like, fucking, and that's what I've done. Someone took me through the 12 steps, guided me through them. I've had my own experience through them. I ain't got 40 sponsees. Do you know what I mean? I ain't got time for fucking 40 sponsees. I've got a couple sitting over there in the front row there, the really unwell ones on death row. No money taking white. No, I love you. And you, Sydney. No, you can't let me pal. But I said I'd mention them, yeah. But no, and that's it, and I fall short, I try my hardest to do the best that I can, and sometimes that ain't good enough. I fall fucking short, you know what I mean? At the minute, me and my partner, she's got laryngitis. I love her. This woman stuck with me for all of this. She took on my little girl from a previous relationship. Not a lot of women, I don't know any other women that have done that, men on with their other children. Do you know what I mean? And all that stuff. She stood by me. She's been through this. For thick and thin fat, I don't think I would have been able to cope and do it, do you know what I mean? And she's got laryngitis at the minute, and last week I was a bit of an arsehole. Well, she can't fucking talk. So it's been all right for a couple of days, yeah, but in a couple of days' time, but it ain't gonna fucking be all right. Because her voice is gonna come back, and it's fucking, do you know what I mean? And it's gonna go off, but it's like it's about commitment. I'm committed in this relationship. I'm committed to my relationship with God, man. I'm committed to my recovery. I could sit and laugh and joke about how funny it was, but trust me, I can laugh about it now, but when I was in that, it wasn't fucking funny. When I'm breaking up in sin bins and stuff, I was like 8 stone at one point, yeah. I could not move without a bit of gear in me, but I could do fucking 50 press-ups to get a vein up, do you know what I mean, to get the fucking gear in me. Do you know what I mean? And how long have I got left, Lois? 10 minutes. Right. Yeah, I remember this time, right? Yeah. No. Right, I'm going to wrap up on this, yeah? Listen, thanks for letting me share. If you're new around, stick around, yeah? There's definitely something going on in here, because I wouldn't fucking still be here. Do you know what I mean? That's for sure. And what this has given me, it ain't just given me 8 years of hard graft of trying to work on myself on a daily basis. It's give my family peace of mind, yeah. It's give my They haven't had to worry. I've had 8 years of the police not knocking on the door. No social services involved. My little girl's been on that Aptus credit stuff from the day she was born. When we went to court, they removed her off that Aptus credit stuff, yeah? And because she's been placed under the care of me, and Tony as well, you know what I mean? So because she's placed that in there, because they know she's in a safe environment, yeah? And this is what this does. Gives everyone else a bit of less worry, do you know what I mean? And, yeah, I don't know what else to say. I'm just going to say thank you very much. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.